at 444-0044 in Spokane, outside Spokane, toll free 877-TAP-COIN. That's 877-827-2646. So we'll kind of jump into the show a little bit here today. A couple interesting things, I guess, as this is kind of a random note, but I don't know how many of you watch local news. There was a few nights ago a guy named Dean Bellamy who was shot and killed by Spokane County SWAT. I knew the guy fairly well, not really as a friend. He was I was in banking for years. He worked for American West Bank, and he'd had, you know, we'd crossed paths quite a bit, and he'd been in the shop a number of times, and he had, we'll just say, in my opinion, not the best, he didn't make the best choices in women. And he was a believer. And the story is that, you know, he'd been accused of domestic abuse. I knew a lot of people around him, and what had happened, in my opinion, and not that I need to make an explanation for the guy, he's gone, but he had married a gal. He'd married a gal later in life who had four kids, and he didn't really check out her past, and she'd had a very sordid drug past, and when he married her, she was in a period of time where she was kind of clean, and she jumped right back into that lifestyle when he introduced some money to the relationship, and it kind of all went from there. She would call and accuse him of domestic violence, and, you know, whether or not it was occurring, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't maybe at that level. He'd sued the county for violating his civil rights for improperly or illegally charging him with domestic violence, which I think kind of shows that, you know, he wasn't committing it, or at least he fought it. Most people won't go to that level. And then they were, apparently the police were called to the house on another domestic violence call, which is, again, the same gal who, and ironically, during this whole period of time, this gal, they had bought their wedding ring here. And during this time, we've been in contact with the ex because she was hawking her wedding ring with a bail bondsman to get her drug addicted boyfriend out of jail, and the bail bondsman was coming here trying to get evaluation on the ring and everything. So I don't know, it doesn't really matter, but it's ironic, it's sad is what it is, that someone I knew fairly well, and like it says in the article, former bank executive, and he was shot and killed by local police. He did file a $1.3 million bankruptcy back in December. All that stuff ties together with the wife. And of course, they're, you know, the police are always going to have, you know, they get the victor, to the victor goes the story, right? And I think when they showed up, he did not, you know, want to be, you know, charged with domestic violence again, and I think he was frustrated they wouldn't listen, whatever. So there's always two sides. I like it where they say at first they used less lethal. First they shot him with a less lethal round. I mean, that's what started, and then he came out shooting. Now, for their attitude, for their first use of force to be a less lethal round, meaning not a hollow point that explodes and blows your body apart, then, you know, he, of course, made the stupid choice to fire back. I think he thought he was dead at that point anyway. it's a sad situation. I knew the guy fairly well, and he'd actually tried at one point in his life to buy our business. Not that it's for sale, but he brought in a big investor and he was trying to talk me into selling the business and stuff. So needless to say, I knew the guy, and a lot of times the media puts a spin on things that makes you think, you know, it says man accused of shooting Spokane deputy had a dark past. And when you get into it, it's, I don't know. I knew the guy, his past wasn't that nearly that dark at all. I kind of know what all led up to that, and I guess it doesn't really matter now, but I just thought I'd drop that in there. And by the way, we got a card for my daughter from a special listener. She knows who she is. She's just been sweet and has always been real supportive. So thanks for that. My daughter appreciated that. So let's get on to the activities of the world. We had the Army Ranger on Wednesday. You know, we'll just kind of bounce through what's going on out there. Jobs, the job and wage numbers are up. Of course, now they're saying that's not from Trump. It's from Obama, right? So, I mean, they're up handily. And it's consumer confidence. One thing I learned in college when I studied economics and even statistical economics, economics is almost 100% about consumer confidence, okay? When you feel good, you spend money. When as a business feels good, they hire people. It's all about perception. It's a psychology. Economics is psychology. When people look at the stock market. Now, the stock market, hands down, I've listened to experts even as recently as yesterday that are saying, get out. I mean, this Dow Jones bubble is literally, folks, based on absolutely nothing other than hype. They're hoping for this and hoping for that, and they're feeling good about this, and there's a businessman in office. So if you have a bunch of money in there, I am telling you, get out. It's a good time. Take your profit and run. Get into metals. Get into semi-numismatic. Numismatic will get you into stuff. The truth of the matter is coins run in a 10/20-year cycle. And what I mean by that, and this has gone back unbelievably far, phenomenally far. A gentleman that's been around pretty well in this industry wrote an article in our American Numismatic Association, which is kind of the top organization for numismatists. He wrote it back in the 90s, tracking this cycle back as further than you would probably imagine, into the 1800s. It's crazy how accurate it is. It's literally 2017. We are literally now coming out of a very strong quality and value-based market. What does that mean? That means that junk, a lot of times what we call semi-numismatic, is cheap, cheap, cheap. It means that a huge amount of things are trading at or near their bullion level. Okay, so we're coming out of a bottom. It means that the only things that are really sustaining a good numismatic value, and you got to realize with coins, they don't crash like stocks. They fluctuate. And what happens is there's an established value for coins. They'll trade over and above that when the market's hot. And I mean crazy over and above, 2-3 times. But, you know, the coins now are trading firmly at their numismatic value. And the semi-numismatic, which is old silver dollars, you know, old gold coins, and a bunch of other things, are trading as bullion, basically. And when I say as bullion, what I mean is they're trading as just the intrinsic value, the precious metals value of their content. Not exactly, but very close. So you go back 10 years. To 2007, the market was peaked out. Numismatics were exploding. Silver dollars were exploding. Everything was crazy. You go back 10 years before that to 97. The market had come down, hit a bottom. And that's when I really started to get active in the market. And value, value, value. I invested heavily in numismatic coins as an individual back then. And did incredibly well, phenomenally well. By 2005 and 6, when I was liquidating a lot of my stuff, I mean, folks, 5-8 time returns, unbelievable. So that was 97. You go back to 87. 87, the coin market was through the roof, beyond ridiculous. A lot, you know, all these major stock companies had come in, the Merrill Lynch's, Kidder Peabody's, I can't remember all the other ones, but coin numismatic coin prices were absolutely exorbitantly high. Of course, 77, they were low. And then 67 was another peak in the market back then. It was uncirculated rolls and proof and mint sets. That kind of stuff was really hot. You go back to 57, a bottom. 47, a huge peak. Post-World War II, people were buying up stuff like it was going out of style. Collectability, the mint was starting to produce some incredibly nice products, and the collectible market was strong. 37, again, we saw kind of a lull. The coin market was just like it is now. There was a lot of the generic stuff was irrelevant. Super quality stuff, you got to understand. That's why when we build portfolios, we go bullion, semi-numismatic, numismatic. Bullion rides the precious metals fluctuations. Bullion gives you that just that solid, long-term, hardcore precious metals investment. Semi-numismatic, that's items that you buy. Now, you got to remember, semi-numismatic can go up and become numismatic. So we sell it while it is semi-numismatic. There's many coins over time, as long as I've been in this, that have gone from semi-numismatic to numismatic. But semi-numismatic are coins that are, you know, rare or scarce, hard to get. But for some reason, the demand may be soft or the focus may not be on them. And you can buy them for very close to their precious metals content. There's no reason to avoid those. Those are great values because you automatically get to ride the precious metals market, but you also have the opportunity to make significant gains based on their supply and demand or rarity or collectability or desirability, however you'd like to look at it. Numismatic coins are a little bit different. They're mostly separate from the precious metals market, although when precious metals have bull markets, numismatic coins rise because money is coming into the overall sector. People don't realize how big the coin market is. It is billions and billions, hundreds of billions of dollars per year go through this market, unbelievably. I mean, you get into the, you know, precious metals aspect of it globally and you're hitting $1 trillion or better. It's very profound. People are like, how do I know this will be worth something when this and that happens? Well, you know, they always say prior performance is usually the best indicator of future performance or future results, prior results, future performance, whatever you want to call it. You're dealing with investment items that have literally gone back to the beginning of written human history. Man has made precious metals into coins as long as we have recorded history. Coins have always been collectible, desirable. I mean, you go all the way back. 1500 BC, Herodotus, the earliest known historian, documented pharaohs' coin collections. They collected coins from all around the world. The values, the fact that Pharaoh traded with other world leaders in collectible coins. It's kind of ironic. Roman coins. Rome was in a lot of ways like the United States of America. By the end, they'd adopted a lot of morally profound perceptions, we'll call it. Very iffy, you know. A lot of women's rights, the homosexuality had become big, free sexuality, homosexuality, a lot of the things that we're adopting in our society. They say bread and circuses. It was food and entertainment. Well, what do we got now in America? We've got the highest level of obesity probably in recorded human history. One out of four Americans is obese. One out of four Americans is severely obese. 70% or something is overweight. I mean, so food and entertainment. We want video games. We've got our iPhones. We've got our televisions. Children spend over 8 hours a day on electronics. We are following in the footsteps of Rome. So Rome led itself into collapse. Even during its reign, its coins were highly desirable. After its reign, the collectability of its coins continued on to this day. You can buy Roman coins that are 2,000 years old. Some of them are tremendously expensive. There are some that are less, a lot less money because of the fact that they made a lot of them. People have heard of widow's mites and things like that. But depending on the quality of the widow's mite, you know, you can be looking at $30 to $60 a piece or more. You might think, well, that's nothing, you know, for that amount of time. Well, you have to remember that a widow's mite at the time had a spending capacity the equivalent of about 1/20th of our modern day penny. It's hard to believe that you could even buy anything, but you could literally barely buy a morsel of something with it. So if you do that math, if you say 20 to a penny times 100 is 2,000 times $60 is 120,000 times return on your money over a couple thousand years. I mean, and you can go back and you can do that with U.S. coins. As a matter of fact, I just happen to have a book on my desk here I didn't intend to have or use. But when I go back through and I even look at, I'll just grab stuff that maybe people would understand, like old U.S. silver dollars. If we go back to the first U.S. silver dollars made, which we do have some in stock, you know, we've got them increasing at rates of an extra fine, which is a nice quality, from 1946 until now, which is about, 60 years, we have a 16,000% return. In 1946, they were $65. Now they're $10,750. Even in the lower grades in fine, in 1946, they were $25. Today, they're about $3,500. It's a 13,800% return. Numismatic coins over time, the right stuff. We have a lot of the, and then the next silver dollar made was the seated dollar. The first dollar was called a flowing hair dollar. That's the one George Washington was involved in. The next coin was a seated liberty. All of our coins had a lot of symbolism on them. They had always had an eagle on the back. People don't realize that if the eagle's wings were open when we created the coin or designed it, that meant we were at a time of war. If the eagle's wings were closed, it meant we were at a time of peace. There's all kinds of symbolism on these old coins. They have arrow shafts and olive branches, and they'll have the number 13 appearing all throughout, representing the 13 colonies and the 13 original stars on a flag and the stripes and all that stuff. They have "In God We Trust," you know, et cetera. So a well-circulated common date seated Liberty dollar in just a nice grade like extra fine, which we have in stock, very fine to extra fine. In 1946, they were $4 a piece, $4 to $5 a piece. Now they're running anywhere from $300 to $400. So they're up 6,300 to 7,700% in 60 years. And on we go. I think you kind of get the picture. You know, the Morgan silver dollars. Now, you got to remember, they made a lot of those, and even the general Morgan silver dollar in extra, you know, like in a mint state 65 quality in 1946 was $3. Today, say it's $175. That's almost a 6,000% return in 60 years. So, you know, I could go on like that, but that's why when we build a portfolio, we balance it. We balance it. It's almost like short, mid, and long term, you know, different scenarios. You've got a survival portfolio in there where you have immediately liquid barter material. But, you know, you can't, a lot of people want all their money in this emergency fund. And in other words, in, you know, they want to invest for the absolute worst of times. And folks, you can't, that's not a biblical precept. You've got to be wise. You've got to, you know, pray for the best, prepare for the worst, of course. But at the same time, you want to be balanced. You can always convert some of it into other stuff. That's a no-brainer. That's a 5-minute transaction. We do it all the time. But we balance it out. We have the base of all of our portfolios in precious metals-based items, very intrinsically driven gold, silver, even some platinum, palladium, things like that. Then the secondary portion of it, and if you think of a pyramid, the base is all that bullion-based product. The second part is going to be semi-numismatic, which is stuff that is trading near its precious metals content, but has a tremendous upside based on an increase in market desirability, which definitely happens in each of these cycles. It does. And you also have to realize cycle to cycle, although these things go up and down on a 10-year basis, they stay at much higher levels each time they hit a bottom from the time before. So long term, you put the stuff away, you're guaranteed to do very well. So semi-numismatic does that. During market booms, a lot of times semi-numismatic will become numismatic. And then numismatic coins are coins that, like I just discussed, they're limited mintages. They're coins that you buy one at a time, not by the bag. And, you know, they do very well over time. They're just an astounding return. They've outperformed. Coins have outperformed. You have to realize this. Every known financial sector in modern history, hands down. And I know people think, well, gee, I don't know, I'm not comfortable with it. But think of the logic. You go to a stockbroker or your 401k or IRA or whatever it is you have. Why are you comfortable handing your money to a company you know nothing about, to someone you really, you know, that they're nothing more than a salesman? Your broker may be a nice guy. That's his job. Stockbroker's number one job is to be relationship oriented, to earn your trust. And in a lot of them, like Edward Jones, they go to all this training. They're basically taught to show up at every community function, all the soccer games, football games, basketball games. They're taught to appear as a pillar of society. They teach them to basically show their face everywhere for people to associate them with family and community. And, you know, that's not bad. That's good. But it's about relationships. It's not about their ability or their brilliance. In fact, with my financial background, most of the time when I talk to these stock brokers, I find very, very quickly that they know nothing. And, very few of them really know much of anything at all. It's kind of shocking to me, because I tend to consume whatever I do. And if I was a stockbroker, which I would not be because my conscience would destroy me, but if I was, I would like to think that I'd be pretty good at it and I'd be very knowledgeable at it. So what I'm saying is, for some reason, because we're surrounded by it and it's the baseline, and everyone, and we're taught to think that everyone's doing it. We're taught to, you know, to do it through our corporations and everything. All of our investments are forced into speculative, products. I mean, to put money into a company you know nothing about, and you really don't. I mean, you might know Apple makes iPhones, but that's about it. You don't know anything about how the inner workings are. You don't know anything about how they, you know, spread their money around, or what makes them profitable or unprofitable, or what makes them have a good quarter or a bad quarter. You really know nothing. And yet people will say, well, I just don't know a lot about coins. And it's not like that. You've got every single thing we sell, especially with the internet, there is an exhausting number of resources to price your items out. We sell everything based on wholesale. One comment we get from people that are adamant about tracking their investments is they call and they say, is this right? You know, these numbers are high. And I'm like, well, yes, they are. The only thing is, we sell stuff at wholesale what it's really worth. So they'll start looking at a lot of these price guides. Will show you auction records and things like that, and they'll start to realize the items that we sell bring a lot more money in most cases on the open market. That's because someone's taken the time to sell them off one at a time. We specialize in larger, higher volume transactions. And so, you know, we've had plenty of people come in and buy coins in bulk from us and spend the time on eBay to sell them off in smaller quantities and make a nice profit. I'm not saying you need to do that. I'm just saying that, you know, when you buy from us, it's based strictly on wholesale value. And I'm not saying you ever need to do that. I'm just explaining the value that we provide at Coins Plus. We're not a lot, any of these other companies you would call, and I mean any, are going to be selling only a limited amount of products. They're going to have whatever's hot for the day or the week or whatever. They're buying it from another dealer at the dealer's cost, and then they're marking it up. They have commissioned salespeople that literally get nothing more than a percentage of the profit. And so the problem with that is here at Coins Plus, we sell stuff on a few percentage point margin. These other places will literally have a 35% markup because the salesman's getting like a quarter of the percentage and et cetera. So the moral of the story is no commission salespeople here. We keep everybody's interest in congruency with your interests. In other words, you win, you win, et cetera. We don't have any conflict of interest where it's to anybody's benefit to maximize profits. That's why when people bring in estates or collections, we're fair. We just have set-by-sell spreads on things. But we do build good portfolios. They're solid. I do know this industry tremendously well. I'm extremely comfortable with it. I love it. I've had my parents in it for many, many years. They've done incredibly well. I've had people in it when gold goes down and call me and say, oh no, I lost a bunch of money, gold and silver went down. And I'm like, no, you actually didn't, because we have you balanced out so well. And a lot of the products we sell will easily gain when the metals are dropping. It's just, we know what we're doing and we're good at it and it's important to us. And again, we sell at the lowest levels you will find anywhere for legitimate product that is sold by a company that specializes in investing. And that's that. So basically, with the markets up where they're at, you really want to take advantage of that now. You want to capitalize on the opportunity. Don't wait. Whatever you do, don't wait for the Dow to take a big correction. It's important to understand that the Federal Reserve Bank, is clearly promising a rate increase this month as their first rate increase. So while we look at Trump's numbers and we say, hey, you know, jobs are up and wages are up and that's all good, not necessarily, because now the Fed wants an excuse to raise interest rates. And the truth of the matter is that they want to raise them up high. They want to control the economy. They don't want it easy to make money. They want you to have to borrow. And they want to load their gun. They put ammo in the gun by raising interest rates up and up and up and up and up with someone like Trump stimulating the economy. Then later on, when a Democrat or a liberal gets in office, they can lower the rates to stimulate the economy. The only thing that people don't realize is this cycle is perpetual. They do this over and over. We end up with big problems and bailouts, and they do one after the next. And unfortunately, our system economically, financially is 100% corrupt. The Federal Reserve system is an unbelievable system. It's backed by nothing. They literally only release dollars as debt. So every single dollar that is created is backed by debt. The other thing that is even worse is for every dollar that a bank takes in deposit, they're on what's called a fractional reserve credit system. For every dollar they take in on deposit, they are allowed to loan out 9 more dollars. So if you deposit $10,000 in the bank, that gives them the ability to loan $90,000. So, and their logic is, well, at any given time, the people generally leave that percentage of their money in the bank and so on and so forth. But ultimately, you know what that leads to. The other problem is, with every single dollar that goes out being backed by debt, the other problem is the fact that the interest on that debt needs dollars as well to pay it back. And so the system is designed to never be paid back. John Maynard Keynes was crystal clear, the actual author and architect of our economic system, was crystal clear that this system was designed to allow the government to confiscate, as he said, an important part of the people's wealth secretly and unobserved without their knowing it. And so it's, you know, John Maynard Keynes was a hardcore communist, socialist, Marxist, and that's what he designed the system for. So to continue on economically, the top 10 largest occupations in the United States are dominated by jobs that pay $20,000 to $30,000 a year. If you don't know what the point of that is, the point is it's not enough. So we've, you know, compressed the middle class into a minority group. We've maximized the lower income group. We've got Obama has done everything to segregate and divide us and create division and hatred and separation. I mean, it is a sad day. It is. When he said, I will fundamentally transform America, he did. And he's got us looking much more like third world countries. Why? Because in third world style countries, who gets elected? It's either the socialist or the radical socialist. The more people you make poor, the more they vote for people that promise them free stuff. And folks, here's what's the saddest to me. Politicians never come through. They just don't. None of the promises are fulfilled per se. I mean, Trump, in my opinion, is probably fulfilling, making every attempt to fulfill promises at a level no other president's probably done before him. He's under scrutiny. He's under fire. He's under criticism, derision. You know, he is in an absolute brutal spot. The man, I'm going to hand it to you, he lacks class and diplomacy, and there's times he appears to be a little bit reckless. But, for example, when he came out and said Obama was tapping Trump Tower, and everybody says, oh, he doesn't have any evidence. Well, first of all, he is the president of the United States, and he does have security briefings that you and I don't. So there's a possibility he's been exposed to security briefings and information that he just can't release because it's confidential. Secondly, when they criticize that argument, I think, wait a minute, General Flynn was operating from Trump Tower before Trump won during the campaign. General Flynn spoke with the Russian prime minister or the Russian ambassador and, you know, claimed he did and did not discuss certain things. Well, immediately afterwards, somebody leaked an actual audio recording of that conversation. Well, they know that leak came from the federal government, which means somebody had a tap on that line to listen to that conversation. Confidentially, they have breached every possible rule that they could by releasing that. But the point is, General Flynn, while in Trump Tower, was tapped. And of course, all these false accusations about Russian associations, etc., they're baloney. They're absolute malarkey. There is no evidence to support it whatsoever. However, it's the populist or the popular narrative going around. It's sad because it's not even based on reality. The left cannot accept the fact that they lost because Hillary was a poor candidate. As I was speaking with a friend today over this, The real issue in my mind, the reason that they have to find an excuse why Hillary lost, I really see the conservative and liberal movement in a spiritual manner, okay? And you can look at things from a spiritual perspective without it being a religious perspective. And what I mean by that is this. When you read wisdom in the Bible, Psalms and Proverbs, whatever, A wise man seeks reproof. A wise man seeks correction. A wise man basically wants constructive criticism. He wants to admit his fault, take responsibility, and grow. A fool does just the opposite. They scoff. They misdirect. They project. They deride. They deny. They minimize. They rationalize, justify, etc. When you have the left lose an election like this, which, by the way, was just a series of elections beginning in 2010 since Obama got in, where they've lost over 1,000 seats total on the municipal, state, and federal level. So they have to deny any wrongdoing. It's a spiritual state of mind. You know, a fool's way seems right in his own mind. You know, the Bible says that clearly, that, you know, that a fool believes he's right, and they don't want to be told otherwise. And so this is why we're seeing this irrational, reckless behavior from the left, that people are like, wait a minute, the right doesn't behave like this, but the left does, and it's not fair, and people, you know, look at that. You know, it says the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. Think about that. That's Proverbs 12. The way of a fool is right in their own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. And what the Bible's telling us there is a wise man, he'll admit when he makes a mistake, but he's saying, tell me, show me. Help me understand what's going on here, and I will improve and adapt. So in a way, you know, part of what we've seen over the last 6-8 years could be attributed to the Republican Party adapting to the needs and wants and desires of the people. One of the problems with that is the fact that we have been on such a moral migration. We've evolved immorally to such a great extent that the Republicans have evolved with that in so many ways. Think about the acceptance, you know, the, I should say, special rights for homosexuals and transgenders. And the key is special rights. These people should have equal rights, absolutely. Black, red, yellow, gay, straight, whatever. It's America. You do have rights, and I will actually fight to defend those. I personally will lay down my life for the rights of any man or woman in this nation who stands for anything other than the destruction of those who disagree, which, as a side note, is one of the issues with Islam, because Islam in and of itself demands a theocracy. It means to submit. The word Muslim means to submit. It means submit or die. And their idea of a peaceful religion is everybody has submitted or been killed, and then you have this false peace, the peace of the fear of the sword. It is the devil's religion. But other than that, we all have a right in this nation. One problem I saw here recently was this shout-down ceremony that we saw at Middlebury University. You may have seen these students yelling over the top of this author, Murray. I think it was Conrad Murray. Screaming over the top of him, you know, I don't even remember, racist, sexist, homophobic, or anti-gay, Conrad Murray, go away, racist, sexist, anti-gay, with their back turned towards him. They yelled for 18 minutes. He stood and waited. He could not speak his free mind. Later that night on news, I saw where this left-winging fruitcake, this Richard Fowler, who apparently has a weekly podcast that's made him famous, stated that it was the free speech rights of these students to do that. Okay, well, my argument is you have free speech rights until they infringe on mine. In some of these protests, these people are bringing blowhorns. And when people start to speak, they're screaming into blowhorns to shut them down. It is absolutely contrary to what this nation stands for. So the argument is that these kids have, from Richard Fowler's, that these kids have free speech rights. So I think somebody made the comment or asked the question, well, what about the free speech rights of the author? And the guy, this Richard Fowler left winger, says, well, he doesn't have anything they want to hear because everything he has to say is stupid. And they're like, wait a minute, you're saying that he doesn't have free speech rights because they disagree. He's saying, no, they don't disagree. What he's saying is wrong and stupid, so they shouldn't have to hear it. And this guy cannot even hear his own rhetoric. His own rhetoric that says, look, I have free speech rights. Anybody that agrees with me has free speech rights. Anyone that speaks what I agree with, they have free speech rights. But if anybody speaks in contradiction to what I believe, they do not have free speech rights. And this Richard Fowler, in a lot of ways, is the epitome of what Obama was when he first came into office. I think Obama learned how to behave better, but I think he also learned how to subvert or covertly or subversively undermine people's free speech rights while offering up the appearance of encouraging it, which takes us back to the scripture, you know, where they say, having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof. And that, of course, is in Timothy, where it tells us about the end times mentality of people is going to be at that level. It says in 2 Timothy 3:5, well, I'll back up a little bit here. I mean, it goes on. Realize this, in the last days, difficult times will come. For men will be lovers of self. I mean, there's so much here, folks, and it's all happening, unfortunately. Lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revelers, disobedient to parents. You know, what you think of that commandment? Obey your parents, honor your parents, and you'll have a long, fruitful, healthful life or whatever. I mean, folks, you know, we have cast this out. We've cast out so many of the commandments in our society. It's scary to me. So it says, in the last days, there will be difficult times, and men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revelers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable. That's the Saul Alinsky rules for radicals. To be completely irreconcilable. There is no compromise. It's our way or the highway, which is very consistent with Islam, isn't it? So we've got this new left-wing, you know, pantheistic, progressive movement that is, it's a non-negotiable. They are not in the business of debating and converting or admitting fault or incorrect. You know, you get my point. So it says they're irreconcilable. It says they're malicious gossips. We've got gossip, you know, where you're talking about somebody else. And gossip is a fine line. I mean, let's face it. There's, when things are happening in people's lives, we talk about it. I mean, when people think discussing anything to do with anybody, and I've seen Christians kind of go off the rails with this, talking about literally a family member. Literally this happened to me. There was a situation where a very close family friend was in a car accident, and I was speaking with a woman about it that I know, who's, in my opinion, a little bit wrapped up in legalism and judgmentalism. So we were talking about the person's accident and their current condition in the hospital, and she said, well, I don't like gossiping about this. And I'm like, excuse me, they've been in an accident and we're discussing their situation. That's very important. That's information. Gossip is basically spreading news or information that is, I guess, either detrimental or potentially detrimental to the other person. It's discussing somebody for the purpose of destruction or vanity or whatever. Relaying information about a person's you know, physical condition after an accident wouldn't be gossip, or every EMT, you know, emergency management tech on these, or medic tech on these ambulances, when they called in the situation, they'd be gossiping every time someone picked up the phone for 911 and said, my son swallowed poison. They'd be gossiping. Gossip is a whole new bear. Now, gossip, as I said, in and of itself may or may not be malicious. This says malicious gossips, just trash-talking people behind their backs. And it says without self-control, which in the fruits of the Spirit is the last one on the list. If you understand Greek or Hebrew, the last is first and the first is last, as Christ said. They put their most important information at the end of a list because they know that human psychology has shown that people remember that best. We put it on first, and by the time you're listing off the other nine attributes, you've forgotten the first. So it says that unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips without self-control, brutal, haters of good. You think about all, you know, to do good, and I won't get into that. Treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. And isn't that the truth? We've put a, you know, another commandment, you know, putting an idol before our God, like our TV, our video games, our computer. Try entertain me, feed me, stimulate my nerve endings. This is the way of the world now. Holding, and then this is where I was going on the, I took a long path to get there. Holding to a form of godliness, although they have denied its power. Avoid such men as these. So they have this form of godliness. They appear, you know, holy and righteous, and they've created this religion of superiority, of arrogance, of the things that I just discussed. You know, it's just this puffed up attitude, this puffed up spirit that is out there, and it is beginning to become extraordinarily destructive. And, you know, and what does it say simply? It says, avoid such men as these. You know, beware, God is not mocked, or do not be deceived. You know, we know all that. As I say, show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Be wise. And so as we move on, you know, we've got so much going on in the news, I don't have time to cover it. We've got this Republican insurance proposal to substitute for Obamacare. In a nutshell, folks, a mess, okay? I mean, anytime you guarantee health insurance to 20 million people who don't have it and can't participate financially, you've got a problem. Trump promised to encourage a free market. The problem in America, we have hands down the most expensive medical system in the world. And unless we get that under control, there's no way around this. I don't know what health insurance premium you can pay that covers $15,000 to $20,000 emergency room visits. I mean, in medication, this absolute hysteria surrounding the opiate thing. Now, you guys have heard me talk about this, and you're probably like, what's up with Kevin in that hole? But the point is, you know, I understand it. I know people in places and that are involved in the back scenes of this stuff, and you know, they spin and they twist, and the statistics they have now are just astounding and out of control. They sound like it's a runaway, you know, train. But the fact is, it's backed up by pharmaceutical companies. Where America's gone wrong is by preventing true free market, which is exactly what I was kind of getting to a minute ago with the health insurance. That's what we need, is a true cross state lines free market. So, of course, Trump, I think, says it'll be in the second or third phase of his insurance plan. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of that. I think that if it's not there now, we've got a problem. You know, we've got, when I'm talking about this freedom of speech, there's a couple things I've got notes here. This Shelby Steele, liberal, senior fellow at Hoover Institute, wrote an article. This is from liberals. He said, liberalism today is exhausted because it has become corruption. Using moral muscle to exercise against authority, or to it says, I guess my notes say, using moral muscle to exercise control, or whatever, I have a typo there, to basically exercise your authority over others is what they're doing. And liberalism is, they've gotten to the point where they have this belief that they have a moral authority, moral superiority, and anyone who disagrees with them is evil. So they're now, reverting to a complete shutdown of honest debate or dialogue. And an attack in their minds on liberalism is an attack on them. So they're now beginning to use physical and what they call moral force and intimidation to shut down oppositional views and opinions. And then in his article, he said people need to realize the level of threat that exists. This is a liberal. This is what's going on. This is serious stuff, folks, because once they shut down free speech, we're done. We are done. And they will vilify as we impose more and more and more of these regulations on our civil rights in the name of terrorism. You watch. These are going to be spun against Christians and probably Jews. We just need one off the rails president, and the people are losing it. And eventually, when we start to give up our civil rights that were handed down, fought, bled, and died for by our founding fathers in a non-negotiable contract called the United States Constitution, when you start to hand those over, beware, it will be used against you. And people are always looking off into the distance saying, oh, but it's, you know, we have to do that so I'm safe on a plane. One thing I get so tired of is people saying, well, you can do whatever you want to me as long as I'm safe on that plane. Well, how, you know, if there are people whose entire career is vested in stripping away your civil rights, what do you think the odds are that your fear of flying will ever be alleviated by them? In other words, they're going to continue to propagate this fear, all these false flag attacks, they call them. It won't end. We need to stand by the absolutes of the Constitution just as we do the absolutes of the Bible. Another, there was an interesting thing on the Trump-Hillary campaign where one of these universities swapped genders and repeated the debate verbatim to try to show that Trump used sexism and all this. Well, what happened was when they had the female giving Trump's argument and exact mannerisms in the debate, and they had a man playing Hillary, people became so infuriated with the male Hillary that the study turned out completely different than what they expected. They expected to prove that Trump was a sexist and all these other things. And what came out at the end was Hillary gained the benefit of her gender by the media giving her far more of a break and her speech actually being arrogant, abrasive, and rude. So we talked about the shutdown at the university, and then another thing here I read by a liberal says the goal of liberalism has changed from individual freedom to moral superiority, that they believe that we are the collective we are better than you. They believe they're better than those crazy religious people that believe in the Bible and have an absolute set of morals and in foundational precepts. And they think they're, you know, it's kind of like, it's very similar to Islam. You've got the Islam hates the Christians and Jews, and then they throw in this batch of people they call infidels. So basically what the liberals are doing now is they hate Republicans and conservatives and anyone else who shares or who disagrees with their personal political views. We're definitely out of time. WikiLeaks, amazing, comes out with this information that the CIA is using everything you can possibly imagine to spy on U.S. citizens. They have Project Assassin 2X, I think it is, where they're using the self-driving capabilities of a vehicle to possibly execute people, they say, to incapacitate. If you don't think your vehicle has that, if you have any of that lane keeping assistance, blind spot assistance, there's all these different things in a vehicle, and mine have it all. Those can apparently be used against you. And we know this is going on, but here's what I do not get in the least. WikiLeaks gets this information out that we would otherwise never get. And it's super valuable. We need to know because we already know. We need it confirmed. So they come out, they discuss all these issues that are so important, and then they attack WikiLeaks and call him a traitor and everything else. And then they, you know, you've got folks, I hope you all have the brilliance to know when news is being spun hard. Okay, they come out with these stories, and what happens? The CIA denies it. And 90% of the media goes, well, the CIA denied it. It can't be true. You know, seriously? And then they spin, and then they make stories up about how bad Julian Assange is with WikiLeaks and come up with a story about how it cost someone their life. I mean, the media takes a narrative or an agenda and begins to hunt down the supporting role or facts to fill that position, to fill that belief. And this is not journalism. And this is, sadly where we have become. So granted, folks, I think you'd agree, we've got some interesting times on our hands. The ball, you know, our eyes have been taken off the financial ball. Don't be fooled. We are in financial mayhem. Financial mayhem lies ahead. Our consumer debt bubbles at $4.1 trillion. The mortgage crisis in 08 was $2.5 trillion. We're just there, okay? It's simple. Do the right thing. Get your money into a precious metals-based portfolio. It's biblical, from Genesis chapter 2 all the way to the book of Revelations, Ezekiel, all over. It says you will be casting your gold and silver in the streets on the final days of judgment because it will not buy you salvation. That tells us it is there until the final day. We know that heaven's bedecked in it. We know that Christ got it first when he came to the earth. We know that in the second chapter of Genesis, God said, here's where you go get gold now. And he said it is good, tov, in ancient Hebrew, the highest complimentary word in the Bible. It's simple. It's what you need to do. You can play along with the people or you can play along with God. And you need to make that call. 444-0044 Spokane. Outside, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN. All the radio shows are listed on the website at coinsplus.com. Thanks again for tuning in. Take care. God bless. Have a beautiful weekend. Bye-bye.